Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. It's Thursday, November 21st, and you are listening to the College Football Daily, a 24/7 sports podcast dedicated to catching you up on and breaking down the day's college football news. I'm Connor Tapp, and today we're talking to Dr. Andrew Zimbalist, an economics professor at Smith College who has taken a particular interest in the economics of sports. With schools like FSU, Arkansas, and South Carolina wrestling with how they're going to afford to buy out their head coaches, I wanted to get an economist's perspective on why these lavish buyout clauses exist in the first place and whether there are any measures we might be able to take to rein them in. So here's the conversation I had with Dr. Andrew Zimbalist. We're joined now by Dr. Andrew Zimbalist, the Robert A. Woods Professor of Economics at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. Dr. Zimbalist, thanks for joining us. I do want to get into the topic specifically of buyouts and college football coach contracts, but I think before we get into the buyout specifically, I think more generally, I want to understand better how you think about, because I've read that you feel that college football coach salaries in general are a bit overinflated. And I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about why you think that is and how and what forces in the market got us to that point.
Compare it to the compensation that is received by the 32 coaches of the teams in the NFL. They are pretty much in the same ballpark. There's some variance there, but they're basically getting the same level of pay. Yet the NFL teams are generating for that group of 32 teams, generating about three times as much revenue. And so that right away should raise some eyebrows. How is it the case that the head of an organization that earns one third of what another organization earns, where they have essentially the same jobs, how come they're getting paid the same amount of money? So that doesn't make a lot of sense. It also doesn't make a great deal of sense, speaking more ethically and less economically, that a college football coach would be getting several times the income of the academic head, the president of the university. But along economic lines, there's another argument to be made, and that is that what's happening in college sports is we have a very peculiar economic system wherein the main producers, who are the players, whether it's a football team or a basketball team, are not getting paid. And so what happens in place of paying them is that the coach who recruits those players to play on the team gets paid much of the value that the player produces. So if you hire recruit your star quarterback to come to your school, and that quarterback is generating $1 or $2 million worth of revenue for you every year, but you can only pay him the equivalent of the grant and aid or scholarship cost of attendance, which might be $60,000 or $70,000, then he's producing a value of $930,000, maybe $1.9 million that doesn't get paid to him. Who does he get paid to? It gets paid to the person who brings him to your school, and that's the coach. So the pay that the coach is getting is surrogate pay for what somebody else is producing. And that's only happening because this is an artificial system wherein the player's pay is suppressed by NCAA rules. Now, another thing to consider here is that if these coaches who we see in college sports, say Nick Saban at Alabama, for an example, because he's making somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million a year, plus a variety of perquisites and outside income that he gets. But basically, if you said, if we passed a national law that said college coaches can't get paid more than the college president, this is hypothetical, obviously. And so let's say now Nick Saban can't get paid more than whatever it might be at Alabama, let's say it's $700,000 a year, and his pay is reduced from $8 million to $700,000. What would Nick Saban do in the world if he said, gee, that $700,000 isn't enough, I'm going to go get another job? What would he do? Well, maybe he'd try to get a job at the NFL level. Those are skills that don't always convert, and we have lots of examples of that. But if Saban were to go to the NFL level, then one of the NFL coaches would lose his job, and he'd become available to the pool of college coaches. But if Saban didn't go to the NFL, what would his next best alternative be? And what it's likely to be is not coaching at the FBS level, but coaching at the next level down, which is called FCS in college sports. And those folks don't get paid several hundred thousand dollars a year, or maybe at the most they'll get paid $200,000 or $300,000 a year. And if he wasn't going to coach at FCS, then maybe he'd coach in Division II or Division III and get paid even less. Or maybe he'd coach in high school. But Nick Saban doesn't have a degree in programming, or it doesn't have a degree in machine learning. Doesn't have a degree in engineering. He doesn't have the alternative to say, oh, well, if you're not going to pay me enough as a football coach, I'm going to go do something else that's going to pay me much more. So what does that mean? It means that the quality of coaching would not diminish one iota if we passed a national law that said coaches couldn't get paid more than a certain level. And so that's the reason why economists often make the argument that it's best to use the free market as a guide to how much somebody produces, is because when you establish market prices based on supply and demand, that resources allocate themselves accordingly. So if you need more people in a certain job and you don't have enough people right now, you raise the wage or you raise the salary and more people will go to that job. So that's, the free market plays an allocative role that creates more efficiency because it brings the people with the best skills to the jobs where they belong. But that doesn't happen in this case because the market isn't a free market to begin with. It's an artificial market where the player salaries are artificially suppressed. So for all of those reasons, the pay structure that has evolved for college coaches, particularly talking about football and men's basketball now, it doesn't make economic sense. It doesn't make ethical sense. Certainly doesn't make educational sense.
So how do you think it's really interesting what you mentioned about the top 32 college coaches and their salaries matching so closely with the 32 NFL coaches. And I wonder how you think about how that ends up being the case. Is it like the one or two college head coaches, or probably a little bit more than that, maybe three or four college head coaches who are these kind of annual threats to leave their job for an NFL position, like the Nick Sabans, the Jim Harbaughs, that in order to keep them in college, they end up, their schools end up paying them NFL wages, and then the other competitor schools, in order to, you know, have the appearance that they're doing their best to keep up with the Alabamas and the Michigans, then have to go pay their coaches similar wages, and things just start to inflate from there?
Yeah, that's basically right. Although these days it doesn't require Harbaugh or Saban to threaten that he's going to go to the NFL. There's simply a higher level that's been established. And most of the coaches are really not really threatening to go to the NFL anyway. They're just simply getting offers from other schools. So, you know, if you're a high school kid, and what would happen if there was a free market here, and I'm certainly not recommending that there should be one, but if there were a free market, teams would send recruiters to the high schools around the country where the best players were. And one school would say to the player, come to the University of Wisconsin, because we'll pay you $1 million a year. And then Michigan would go to the same kid and say, oh, we'll pay you $1.1 million. And then Notre Dame would go and say, we pay $1.2 million. And you'd have that kind of a level established. But obviously, you can't attract the kids by offering them more money. That's not allowed. So how do you attract the kids? You attract them by saying, oh, we have a nicer football stadium than they do at Wisconsin or at Notre or at Michigan. And we have a better tutoring system to keep you in your classes and keep you eligible to play. And we've got this really famous coach, and every year we end up going to the college football playoff, and a lot of our players every year end up in the NFL. So if you want to get proper training, you want to get proper exposure, and you want to have a great career, then you should come to our school instead of going to Wisconsin or Michigan. So the coach becomes the coach's reputation. Becomes the element that replaces the wage offer to the college, to the high school kid, to get the kid to come to the school. So it's this very nefarious system that has evolved that now has the coaches enshrined as being worth this amount of money. They're at the last count, there are 33 coaches right now that have more than $6 million a year compensation packages. In college sports, and that number has just kept growing over time. We don't know where it will end. But as I began to say, the standard right now no longer is, well, if you don't sign me to this long term contract at such and such a salary, then I'm going to go coach for the Green Bay Packers, or I'm going to go coach for the New England Patriots, or what it might be. It's simply that if you don't pay me this, another college will.
Yeah, so we're kind of at the point in starting around the beginning of November, teams that are having disappointing seasons, they kind of start and look at seeing about whether they need to maybe make a change at the head coaching position. And teams like, I know South Carolina right now is at a sticking point with, man, they would really like to make a change, but they've got to pay their coach a $19 million buyout if they do that. And I think there's this growing feeling among fans that many of these buyout clauses are needlessly exorbitant in favor of the coach, and that the schools end up ceding a lot of leverage to the head coach. And I wonder if that's how you see it.
Yeah, Matt, I think that every element of the package is unrealistic for the reasons that we've been talking about. And the buyout clauses are probably the most egregious of any of them, because, as you point out, there are a couple of dozen coaches now in FBS that have buyout packages that are eight figures, $10 million and above. And sometimes it's $25 or $30 million. And what does that mean? It means that if a coach is fired for a is fired without cause, which happens all the time, so it might be the case that a coach is fired because they engage in sexual harassment. That would be fired for cause. But more typically what happens is the coach is let go because the team hasn't performed at the level that they want the team to perform. Then that coach is given a $25 million package. And the coach simply requires that. You know, the coach says, if you don't give it to me, then some other school will give it to me. And so along with the salary level and along with the perquisites and along with a lot of other stuff that the coaches get, they say, This is another clause in my contract that I insist upon. And so school after school, in order to attract the coach, says, well, okay, if that's what the so-called competitive market, it's an artificially competitive market, but the so-called competitive market, if that's what it requires, then we'll go along with it.
I know that this is a very complicated issue, and I don't know, that there are probably more holistic measures that you might think would be a more effective remedy. But if you were specifically looking to figure out how we could, I don't know, do something about these buyout clauses, is there anything in particular that you think would work or you might recommend?
Well, I think that the only way really to get control over this market is to grant the NCAA a partial antitrust exemption. It should be conditioned on a bunch of other things, but part of the deal would be to give the NCAA a partial antitrust exemption, which would enable them to impose limits on the coach's salary. And I wouldn't impose the limit that I referred to earlier. I wouldn't say that the coach's salary is limited by the college president. By the way, Bear Bryant, the great famous coach from the 50s and 60s, at Alabama, had a rule, and it's known as the Bear Bryant rule. And his rule was he refused to be paid more than $1 less than the college president was paid because he thought it was inappropriate. It would be unseemly for that to happen. But I wouldn't use that as the rule. I'd take a rule like the average professor of the, excuse me, the average salary of the full professors at the school. Because if you make the limit the college president, then all they'll do is raise the college president's salary up to $6 million.
Mm. Do you see this issue with the head coach compensation being especially worse now than it was maybe 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, much worse. Much worse. The whole thing started to explode after the NCAA decision in 1984, Board of Regents of Oklahoma versus the NCAA. That was a decision that basically took the control of television, the national television contract, away from the NCAA and gave it to the conferences and to the schools. Television contracts exploded, and that led to much, much, much higher revenue in big-time college football, which led to new stadiums, which led to the effort to attract coaches, and everything started to spiral up since then. But as revenue has grown from larger television contracts, from playing in fancier stadiums with luxury suites and club seats and all sorts of sponsorships going on at the facility, that you've had this tremendous ongoing explosion in coaches' salaries. They've been going up 10-15% a year for a period of 15 or 20 years.
Okay. Dr. Andrew Zimbalist, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
After Dr. Zimbalist brought up the fact that the TV contracts are doing so much to drive the boom in coaching salaries, our producer, Chani Levitt, brought up the point that the SEC's TV contract with CBS comes up in 2023. And I guess I should mention that CBS is the parent company of 24/7 Sports. And it's expected that the SEC is going to get a significant raise compared to what CBS is currently paying. So, without some form of intervention, these coach salaries, and by extension, their buyouts, are only likely to get bigger. We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we've got an update on LSU's sack leader and some injured Penn State Nittany Lions headed into this weekend's game against Ohio State.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Next week for Thanksgiving, we are hoping to air on the podcast some comments from listeners about things they're thankful for. So if there's a college football thing for which you would like to express thanks, call 312-789-5647 and leave us a voicemail. That's 312-789-5647. On to the news. LSU sack leader Michael Divinity could return in time for the national championship game if the Tigers make it that far, Ed Orgeron said on Wednesday. Divinity left the team under somewhat mysterious circumstances, at least publicly so, the week prior to LSU's win over Alabama. Orgeron said that before that point, Divinity would not be eligible to play, and teammate Jacoby Stevens used the word suspension to describe the nature of Divinity's absence. James Franklin said on Tuesday that he is hopeful that wide receiver KJ Hamler and running back Noah Kane will return from injury on Saturday against Ohio State. Hamler, who is Penn State's leading receiver, exited the Nittany Lions' win over Indiana last weekend with an injury to his head and neck area suffered during a kick return. At the time of Noah Kane's injury on October 26th, he was Penn State's leading rusher, but Journey Brown has taken up that mantle in his absence. Updating an item from earlier this week, University of South Carolina President Bob Caslin now says he misspoke when he told the Florence Morning News that USC Athletics Director Ray Tanner had consulted with FSU about how they navigated Willie Taggart's buyout. On a related but somehow even more bizarre note, South Carolina also says it has fired a student manager who was arrested on the night of Halloween for fighting a man who is dressed as Will Muschamp, holding an $18 million buyout check. That's going to do it for today's episode of the College Football Daily. If you appreciate what we're doing, we ask that you do one thing this week to help spread the word about the show. If you need a suggestion of a thing that you could do to help spread the word about the show, hey, leaving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts would be just great. For Trey Scott and our producer, Tawny Leavitt, I'm Connor Tapp, and we'll see you on Friday for the next edition of the College Football Daily.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.